Okay, I want to know how many daily Bible readers do we have? 100. All right, let's get with the program. Let's keep it together. Now remember, somewhere there is a daily Bible reading schedule. Some of you have it on the chronological order. I think Donna's using the different style, and Tim is an oddball. But some of us are following the chronological, but read your Bible every day. Donna, you've been an oddball. You just will stick with the program. You can do the chronological next year when we do something different. Okay. All right. Tim will probably do that too, then we're doing something different. But anyway. All right. So, now, I got to get back to my Bible notes. Turn to Revelation chapter 20. Revelation chapter 20. Here's one. You get one? Okay, so I want somebody to read verses 1 through 4. Revelation chapter 21, rather, verses 1 through 4. Revelation chapter 21, verses 1 through 4.
And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away.
Okay.
Yay! Good day.
Does that sound like a time when there's no troubles? Yeah, it is. Now, remember, the last chapter we looked at a couple of scenes that depicted the same thing, which was what? The judgment day, okay? And so, you know, we live here on this earth, okay? Do we have troubles to deal with? You have a lot of pain and issues. You know, you get old, the hair falls out, and the joints hurt. You know, right? And you fall off ladders. Becky shakes her head. and you have surgeries for your heart and all kinds of problems, right? You got problems with people problems, you know, job problems, you know, and the problem is you got to go to work to get a job.
Family
problems. But there's all kinds of struggles, all right? Now, the thing is, the whole thing about the Bible, it's saying that, okay, here's a plan for us to live nowadays in the middle of all this pain and suffering. But there's going to come a time, and part of the reason for following the plan that God has given for us is so that it's because there's a time coming when this is going to end and there's going to be something else. Now, for those that are faithful and follow God's plan, it's going to be pretty good. You know, the Apostle Paul talked about having his hope set on heaven. And the reason was, anybody went through a lot of struggles, it was the Apostle Paul. And he just kept going. He kept following God and kept doing what he says, because I know there's something better coming. And so that's what this is talking about. And so we need to keep that in mind because, guys, in the middle of your struggles here, I want you to look at the guidebook. And I want you to make decisions on how you respond to the struggles by what the guidebook says. In other words, It doesn't matter who we are, where we've been, you know, whatever, if been in life. You know, the guidebook is for everybody. And so we need to work at following that guidebook. Now, the thing about following the guidebook, and this is one thing that I find is so wonderful, and that is that when we follow the guidebook, we are still going to have struggles, but it's going to make a lot better life. You know, you look around at people that don't follow the guidebook and some of the struggles that come because of the things they do, you know. I like to be kind to people because God says to be kind. And you know what comes back, you know, because when you treat people kind, how do they treat you? Almost always they're going to treat you kind. And so that's where, you know, and that's just a basic tenet of the New Testament. And then when we've got a group of people that Jesus paid for the church with his blood, and we've got a group of people that are striving to follow that, it's kind of a little taste of heaven, isn't it? Isn't it wonderful? What would we do without God's family? Okay? We can trust one another. And we don't have to worry about watching our back around the family of God. Now, this is where, you know, if the church is not a taste of heaven, there's something wrong and we need to get it straight. We need to work it out. And so that's something that's very important. And so at any rate, this place that God is talking about is a wonderful place. Now, the book of Revelation is written in what style? Signs. Okay. A sign. One thing represents something else. And so we're looking at that. And so we have seen so many signs. And of course, here we're kind of going to be pretty plain, I believe, as we look at some of these things. But I want to go back to verse 1. And it says, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. Now, well, let me include verse 2 in that. It says, and I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And so here we go. We've got a kind of an overview. New heaven, new earth.
Let's go back to the first part.
Okay.
It says that there's a new heaven.
Right.
When he destroys everything, he destroyed everything, including heaven.
Well, we're talking about...
Or is this our new heaven?
Well, I think it's talking about the place that Jesus went to prepare. Not, in other words, he didn't destroy that, but the new heaven, new earth. Remember, let's go to John chapter 14.
Or does he mean the heaven is our new earth?
Well, the heaven, see, it's all new. And so, Jesus, go to John 14. So somebody read John 14, 1 through 4.
Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And where I go, you know, and the way you know.
Okay. So what did Jesus do?
Well, he didn't. Not destroy them.
Well, keep in mind, the destruction is... This is talking about an overview of what's going to take place. All right? We'll look at the destruction part of it in just a minute. Okay? Remember, it says the first heaven and the first earth were what?
Destroyed.
They're passed away. They're done. It's over with. What is there no more? In verse 1.
Sea.
So there's no more sea? Okay. So we got a totally different situation here, don't we? You know, this is not something where it's just a makeover.
So why would he prepare mansions to just...
Well, but he's not destroying. He's going to prepare the place. All right. And so the new heavens and the new earth.
That's something we've not seen.
He's just generalizing it as this is one thing now.
Well, I think he's, as we look at that, remember the Jews talked about the heavens.
Okay? Which he just says he destroyed.
Yeah. But what do we think about? Where do we look when we when we talk about heaven? We look up. But what is up?
The stars.
It's God's creation. Okay? And we look up and we say that's heaven. Well, that's material. And so the only logical explanation, he's talking about those heavens that are destroyed. Because he talks about that in 2 Peter, about how all of these works that God made are destroyed. And so that first heaven and the first earth are passed away. Okay? And so as we look at that, go to 2 Peter chapter 3. And let's read a little bit in along that line. And so, let's read verses 10 through 11. Well, 9 through 11. So, 2 Peter, chapter 3, verses 9 through 11. Somebody read that. Okay. Godliness. Right. Okay. So now notice how here, and so when you're looking at prophetic language, you're going to have to look at other language that's plain to really to be able to understand what it's talking about. Okay. So this passage in chapter verse 10, what does he say is going to pass away? What's it going to be destroyed? What's that?
The works.
The works? And keep going. It may be more detailed.
The heavens will pass away with a great noise.
Yep, the heavens are going to pass away with a great noise. What else?
Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up.
Both the earth and the works that are in it are going to be burned up. And so basically everything we know and see is going to be gone. When you look at, notice verse 11. It says, seeing that all these things shall be dissolved. Now, this is not a word that relates to dissolving sugar. Because if you dissolve sugar, what has happened? Is it gone? It's just a liquid sugar, right? And so it still is in existence. But this is not what he's talking about. This is not the word that he's using. The dissolved in this case is when it no longer exists. Okay, and so the heavens, that's the physical, the earth, and all of the works are going to be gone. It's over with. It no longer exists. It's finished. Okay, and so when we look at this passage in Revelation chapter 21, we have to put it in the light of some of these plain things. And so read it again. Somebody read verse 21, verse 1 again. Chapter 21, verse 1.
Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. Also, there was no more sea.
Okay. So, and you can see, you know, what is the most essential thing to sustain life as we know it?
Sea. Water.
Water. So what God is describing here is something totally different. And so, you know, to say that, okay, well, God is just gonna make all this physical stuff new, does that agree with what he's saying?
Nope.
No, because the first is gone. It's totally, it's dissolved. It no longer exists. God created it and spoke it into existence from nothing. Nada. And when the day of judgment comes, he takes it back to nothing. No longer exists. But what did Jesus go to do?
Prepare a home for us.
Okay? And so as we look at it from that perspective, it changes the makeup of things. Because it's a little different, a big different situation. It's a place that Jesus went that he's not ashamed of. Any of you ever built something? And so what do you look at? The imperfections? And so, you know, a lot of times you look at it with shame, okay? Because you see all the mistakes. Jesus isn't ashamed of what he went to prepare. Does that tell you a little bit about the place that he's preparing for the faithful? I want to be one. Okay? And so I want to do my best to live for the Lord every day. Okay, so in verse 2, it says, "And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her church." Her husband. Okay. So I want to explore this bride adorned for the church and this New Jerusalem a little bit. Let's go to Hebrews 12. I want somebody to read Hebrews 12, 21 through 24.
"And so terrifying was the sight that Moses said, 'I am exceedingly afraid and trembling.' But you have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn who are registered in heaven, to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of just men made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaks better things than that of Abel."
Okay, so now the comparison is made when Moses and the people went to the Mount of God. Remember how afraid they were? They were scared to death. Okay. And then it makes a comparison with what you and I come to today. Okay. We come to something so much more majestic. We studied that on Wednesday class a week ago, a week and a half ago, about the difference between the old and the new. We got something so much better. Okay. We're come to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. All right? And so a lot of times we look at this Jerusalem, and I think we've got to let the New Testament speak as to what all that is talking about. All right? And so this Jerusalem is not talking about the physical Jerusalem, but it's the heavenly Jerusalem. All right? Now I want to go to another passage, and I want to look in Galatians chapter 4 and verse 26. Now, in chapter 4, God is giving an analogy of Ishmael and Isaac. All right? Ishmael was a son after the flesh. Isaac was the son of promise. All right? And he says within that passage that Ishmael answers to Arabia or Mount Sinai, the Old Testament. And the New Testament relates to Isaac or the son of promise. In other words, The New Testament is the Son of Promise. That's what he was looking for the whole time. He's coming to the New Testament. Now, I want somebody to read verse 26 there. The Jerusalem, which is what?
Above.
It's above. It's not here on this earth. It's the Jerusalem that's above. And the Jerusalem that is above is the mother of us all. That's the one Christ is reigning in. And he is reigning. And we have that as a promise. Okay? And so this new Jerusalem is a heavenly Jerusalem. It is not physical. It doesn't need water to sustain it. And it's in the presence of God. Okay? Now, notice it says, what kind of Jerusalem? In verse 2? Revelation 21 and verse 2? Good to see you. Yeah, it's new, right? Not old. It's new. And so where did it come from? Down from heaven. All right. And so this new Jerusalem, it's a new Jerusalem. It's not the old Jerusalem. The old Jerusalem is not what plays into this. It's the new Jerusalem that comes from heaven. All right. And that's the one that he's talking about. It's one that Jesus went to prepare. And it's simply talking about heaven. But now I want to spend some time that we have left in talking about this I really wanted to deal with. Let's go. I want to go back and review Revelation 19, 7 through 9 before we go, because this is referring back to the marriage of the Lamb. And I want to look at the marriage. Because the marriage is a very, very important thing that's seen within the scriptures. And so somebody read Revelation 19, 7 through 9.
Let us be glad and rejoice and give him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready. And to her it was granted to be arrayed in fine linen, clean and bright. For the fine linen is a righteous act of the saints. And then he said to me, right, blessed are those who called to the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he said to me, these are the true sayings of God.
Okay, so, you know, being a part of that marriage is a blessed state, isn't it? All right. Are there responsibilities according to this? Can you point it out in that passage? The responsibilities related to this marriage.
Righteous acts of the saints.
The righteous acts of the saints. Sorry. I got to take care of details. Got some people on the road and they're traveling. And I said, is it okay if we walk in late? I said, no.
No.
Yeah, we lock the door at 10:30. You're either here or you're out. I've been late a few times.
I was just late.
Yeah, Dorothy was late. I can't believe we let her in. Okay, so notice here that the correlation is made to the bride and the bride of the Lamb. Do we want our bride to be pure? Do we want to take special care of our bride? Do we want our bride to take care of us? Guys, I think as we look at the marriage of the Lamb, we need to recognize the responsibilities that we have, because the church is the bride. Okay, I want to go back to Ephesians chapter 5, Now,
do they know who the Lamb is?
Who's the Lamb? We talked about that before. Who's the Lamb here?
Jesus.
Yeah, Jesus is the Lamb. Okay. A very important aspect of it. As the church, we need to stay pure. All right? We need to have those deeds, those works. We need to follow what Jesus says. And so this is the thing about this passage in Ephesians chapter 5. We use it for the marriage relationship, and rightly so. But as you get down to verse 31, you're going to find that there is one purpose of this verse. It's not so you'll have a good marriage. It's so that we'll understand our relationship with Jesus. All right? So somebody begin reading in verse 22, and I want to read down through 32. Ephesians 5, 22 to 32. Dorothy wants to read.
I want to read.
Go for it, Dorothy.
Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is head of the wife, as also Christ is head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives. Just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself, a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother, and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church.
So what was the purpose of this dissertation on marriage? To show us what the church is supposed to be, isn't it? We are this bride. As the bride, what is that word we don't like?
Submit.
What are we as the church supposed to do with Jesus?
Submit.
How do we know what Jesus wants us to do?
The Bible.
We got to read his word. Guys, you know, let's not make apologies for Jesus and his word. Let's just do our best to encourage one another and strengthen one another to follow it. We have the responsibility to submit to Jesus. We must keep our robes pure, just like we would want our wife to be pure. We want to be pure for Jesus. He sacrificed for us. He gave us his life. You know, love your wife as your own body. But what's he talking about? He's talking about the church. Jesus died to cleanse the church. As the church, we submit to Jesus, and that's our responsibility. Is that always easy? You wives, you have to put up with us honoring men. Is it easy?
No.
Sure is. Carmen's got to get in on that. And so guys, keep that in mind. All of us have that responsibility. So, all right, we're out of time. Good class. I enjoyed the opportunity, and we will look forward to continuing it next week.